nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Two announcements. This is a slide, the one that you have up there. It's on a slide that I put up the very first day of classes. Okay, so we've had this deadline, or one of these deadlines, since day one. So I guess I just want to remind you that a week from today we will be having our midterm. Okay, what will that midterm cover? It will cover everything until last Wednesday, until basically 2 days ago. Okay, so today's lecture is going to be part of the next midterm, if you want to call it midterm, a final midterm, because, you know, we just do it in two halves, right? So that's, I think, what you should know. And I'm sure you know it, but if you forgot it, I'm wanting to remind you so that on Friday doesn't come as a surprise, okay? The other thing that I want to announce is that I know I owe you homework. I have not finished grading it. That's why I didn't return it. But I promise that, including the one that is due today, I will return it on Monday. Okay? I don't know if you have any questions regarding the administration. No questions? Okay. Okay, that's the one thing I wanted to make sure it came across. And today we start a different topic. It is related to... Yes?
Sorry, is the test...
That's a good question. Will the test be open notes? I've been thinking about that, and I think you can bring a cheat sheet if you want and a calculator. I think that's perfectly fair. My suggestion is that if I decided to allow you guys to bring also open notes, open everything, then I will be in a position where I could ask you even harder questions. And then that wouldn't be fair, right? So I figure that at least we make it so that it's something that is doable within this, you know, the constraints of what will happen in 50 minutes, right? And then it's something where I cannot ask you something more difficult than, you know, something you could do in a sheet of paper within those constraints, okay? We can do it the other way too, but I don't think you want to do that. Okay? Yeah, my issue is, I mean, it potentially could be done. The only issue that I see is that the moment I start thinking, oh, but they have their notes. Okay, I can ask this question, right? And if you don't have your notes, then it makes it much harder for me to ask you a hard question. Okay, because I know that when I, you know, sketch it out, if you have an extra amount of stuff that you can use, or if you don't have that amount of stuff that you could use, then it makes it harder for me to ask that. Okay, I think I already said it like three times, but I really want to make the point across. Okay, okay. Any other questions? Let's see. Oh, for those that are students that are here on campus, exam will be here, and the ones that are at Crane, I will make sure that there is together with Ron Studerman, that there's a venue for you guys to do it, or a mechanism for so that is performed. Okay. Let's see what else. I think that's pretty much it. So this a week from today, then there won't really be a class. We will just be having the exam here. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? I think I covered everything. I think I did. Okay. So now we're gonna talk about dendrites and rechargeable batteries. Okay, we've kind of like touched that. We know that it's related to the SEI layer in some way. And as we progress, you'll see how things that we have already known, how they start coming together to at least highlight the complexity of this problem. Okay, this slide that I'm going to show you, at least the fourth set of slides, are slides that were shared with me by Quinn Horn. He works at Exponent, and he is very good at cross-sectioning batteries. I think they have a in-house a technique to do it. And these presentations are not that new. They were presented at the meeting of the Electrochemical Society in 2007. Okay, and I'm not going to show you the whole presentation. I just picked two or three that I will show you. I think I also showed a couple of these slides already to the people at Crane, but not from this perspective. So what you have here, it's a rechargeable battery that exploded. Okay, it's not a big explosion in the sense that. Well, hopefully no one got hurt on that one, but the idea here is that what you have here, I don't know if you can see these grooves, these corresponds, each of these depressions corresponds to one of these cells, right? For example, this one corresponds to this one over here. Okay, this one corresponds to that one over there. I think you can see, you know, where the actual cells will be sitting in this pack, okay? It's not clear, at least from the slides, where, what part of what electronics this belong to, but from your everyday life, I am inclined to speculate that it's the back of some laptop, right, where the battery caught fire. You can see what is the battery that actually exploded. You can see is this one over here, which corresponds to this one referred to as M1, okay? And my understanding is that these batteries were connected in pairs being in parallel. So, for example, M1 and M2, both of them, both of those batteries are sharing the same load. Well, notice that L1 and L2 are completely depleted. They have no voltage after they're taking them out. Okay, while H2 and H1, they have the voltage, it's still at 4.15, right? The basically the equilibrium potential, right? After the whole accident happened, okay? So, what Quinn did, oh, and by the way, the one on the right, it's I think it's almost like an X-ray of the cell. That's where you can see the different packs, okay? And what you see here, okay, it's, the dendrites growing in the battery. Okay, I'm gonna try to sketch it out here. Okay, it's a lot of very interesting features and that I'm hoping you can appreciate. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So, try to make it even at the same angle if I can. Okay, I want you to notice that these structures as they grow almost vertical, not quite. Okay, notice that as they grow, they have some regions that are wider than others, okay, highlighting with that the difference in chemistry, okay, different regions have different compositions, okay. With this lighting, it might be harder to see, and apparently that one didn't quite go. Oh, there it is. somewhere here in between, something happens, so the dendrites are being perturbed. Okay, they are not specially distributed. Okay, as they grow, notice, and I'm going to refer to what we have here on the slide. Some of them are, you know, in this scale, they're widely spaced. Right, this separation is around 20 micrometers. Okay, so this distance must be around 50 microns between these two structures, okay? They're not, they might be pure lithium, but I'm more inclined to say that they're lithium rich, okay? And you can compare them with this cluster over here, and you can see how that cluster, actually, you have a lot of small islands, and I'm gonna try to draw it down here. Okay, doing the same thing. With a different internal structure, okay. Oh, sketch it out. Okay, that's a separator. Okay, they are always growing as the text says from the anode into the cathode. In this case, the anode it's indeed a set of graphite layers. So here I'm just going to try to do that. Here you have the graphite layers. Okay. Okay. Okay, and they're growing on top of it. Okay. What I find extremely interesting. Okay, this is just a close-up in one of them. Okay, is the fact that, well, first of all, if you look at the dendrite itself, you can see that even the internal contrast of the dendrite is not uniform, in the sense that you could see that it's growing like rings as it goes from one layer to the next. Okay, something indeed is happening. Every single recharge cycle, this object is growing, and as it grows on the next layer, it leaves some trace behind of something that accumulated on its surface. Okay, we can, I think from previous lectures you can start guessing what that stuff might be. Okay, something there is accumulating on its surface. Okay. Okay, and then it reaches this intermediate layer. I don't know if you can see it with this light. There is, maybe this light is not the best one. I'm gonna lower the lights if you don't mind. And hope you can see that. Hope that is much clearer. Yeah, can you see the, it's much easier to see it on the screen, but I don't know if you can see in between this, like, change of gray value. Okay. Okay. Did I just ruin your recording? I hope I did.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah, sorry about that. So clearly there's something going on there, right? So we can also guess what type of structure is here, right? Clearly this is the separator. Okay. And we can guess, well, we really don't know. I mean, there was really very little that was told to me, regarding the structure of this battery. I do know that this is graphite, okay? This one, because we have three layers there, I am almost inclined to say that this is a Celgard separator, maybe a Celgard 2400, okay? We talked about this before, so we have a guess of what's going on there. If you guys remember, the Celgard separator was such that it had a very porous region in the middle, okay? So, and you can see here, just from looking at it, that, let's just focus on this one, you can see a recharge sequence occurs, so you grow that nuclei, then another sequence occurs, and you grow that one, okay, and then you keep going until you reach the separator, and notice what happens, you start having like this kind of like fluffy structure that starts developing, meaning that, well, we do know, okay, that somewhere here we have this porous structure. Okay, that is gonna impose obstacles for the dendrite to grow through. So what the dendrite can do as it reaches here, you can see it's probably gonna start bending around those obstacles. Okay, and eventually it's gonna start percolating through. And that's why it looks like the dendrites themselves start growing dendrites, right? That this structure starts to develop their own arms, trying to go through the porosity, okay? And then, of course, it finishes, it reaches that structure, the end of that structure, and then it starts growing again from the bottom of that porous region, okay? So there are also all sorts of other interesting things. For example, look at the graphite particles too. Okay, it really is highlighting all the failure mechanisms that we've been discussing. You can see here this internal layering, which doesn't seem quite right, in the sense that I would be inclined to speculate that there's some exfoliation of graphite as it occurs. For example, you can see here, you know, how the roughness changes internally. On the surface. Let me go one slide back so you can see it better. I don't know if you can see it there, how the graphite particles are all have this, let me try to sketch one. But instead of looking quite like that, some of them have these like jagged edges, right? Suggesting that maybe the electrolyte managed to get through, and within each cycle it managed to start spalling off the material. Okay, not necessarily in one cycle, right? But as these cycles keep accumulating. Okay? So that's occurring there too. There's something also different, that it's being exchanged between the cathode material and the anode material, because even as it crosses the separator, there's some sort of funneling of this gray stuff as it's being exchanged, either because it's maybe it's some lithium going in that direction, maybe something from the cathode that dissolves into the electrolyte and it's coming back. Okay? It's hard to tell at this point with basically based on what we got, right? But it's, even the separator seems to be non-uniform, right? You can see this black spot there suggesting that something there is completely dead. Basically, as this micrograph was taking, it really didn't stain what they were trying to get, right? And that clearly has an impact, right? Or it's related in some way to what we're finding in these dendrites. Okay. Anyway, that's the structure. This slide attempts to highlight the fact that as it finishes crossing the separator and touches the counter material, it is at that point where this highly metallic object undergoes arcing, right? In this case, that arcing may lead ultimately to not only to failure or to the fact that the battery stops working, but to basically a potential explosion of the cell, because right now we're being exposed to that electrolyte. Okay? So I find this particular micrograph very interesting in that sense, okay? Because it really highlights the complexities and the difficulty of avoiding this, right? And maybe you can show that in one last slide. Here in this one, I don't know if you can see how as the dendrite touches the separator, okay, the dendrite kind of bends around it, right? Meaning the separator itself is opposing some sort of force for that dendrite to grow through. Okay, and that's exactly the whole point of the intermediate layer that people have put in it, okay, to mechanically suppress it down, okay, or to at least impose some transport obstacles for the dendrite to go through so that it actually takes time to go and get to the other side. Okay? Now, how do we, based on what we know, how do we specify the growth of this object? Okay, all we know is that at this interface, I'm going to put it over here. Maybe I should turn back the lights on. Is that too much? Is this okay? Okay, thank you. Okay, all we know is that at this surface, okay, this interface at every point is moving at a velocity V. Okay, at a normal velocity V, okay? It's not moving sideways. Basically, there's some velocity normal to the surface that is parallel to the surface normal vector that is pushing that dendrite to go through. That's really all we know, okay? And we also know, actually, the other thing we know is that the reaction occurring at the interface must be Butler-Bohmer-like. Okay? So there's some flux of charge per meter squared per second. Okay? Basically, the lithium ions coming and reacting at that metallic spot. Okay? Recombining itself into lithium, that lithium ions and the electrons recombining themselves into pure lithium. Okay? To basically plate there, okay? That's the basics of it, okay? And, well, I'm just going to call it JBBP for plating. Okay? And I do know that this one, of course, has units of, okay, ZF being Z, the valence of the ion, in this case 1, right? F, Faraday's constant, and gamma, which is really the deposition rates, the deposition rate in mass per meter squared per second, right? So here I have on this end coulombs per meter squared per second, okay? And what I do know is whatever comes here has those units, okay? And then we just take borrow a page from what Einstein contributed, and we know that a mass flux is proportional to the concentration, basically in this case the amount of stuff that just deposited, times the velocity of that interface. Okay? I hope you have seen this before, and if you haven't, I promise you that these units will match those units, right? This could think of it as having units of mass per meter cube, and the velocity, of course, has units of meters per second. So you can see this meter and that meter cube combined so that I get meter squared. I still have the seconds down here. Okay, so and I end up with mass per meter squared per second. Okay? But does that make sense? Okay. So if you do that, then, oh, and C, of course, is the amount of stuff, right? The concentration, okay, of the material that has just come in here to that little volume element. Okay? So we have here then okay? So notice in this case that I have related my plating rate, which, by the way, I should have actually said it here, this function is a function of the overpotential as well, right? It's basically a Boutlet-Bomer relationship, right? It may have additional handles, and it may have maybe dependent on the local curvature, maybe depends on the local stress, right? As what we did as part of the homework, right? But it's all coupled there, right? It's this function now, it's relating to the velocity of the interface, okay? As compared to plane intercalation, okay? In this case, that Boutlet-Bomer interface is actually moving, okay? Well, that's the twist, if you may, of this deposition right now, okay? And that's what's controlling right now the motion of that interface. Presumably, the porosity associated to the separator is making it harder for stuff to go through, either maybe because the conductivity is lower, which we know is much lower, right? You guys remember, right, that, especially when you did the homework, not this homework, but the previous one, you know that you have to estimate that the porosity of the system to have a specific value. And from class, we know that there's, that the conductivity is highly dependent on how much electrolyte it managed to actually filter into that separator. Okay? So, clearly, if this thing is more insulating, lithium will travel at a much slower rate there. Okay? And that's why, one of the reasons why you want it so thin as well. Okay? Okay? Okay, well, that said, you can see that this distribution will be non-uniform, and solving that little equation for every point will be quite a challenge. Typically, what people do, okay, is refer to, and I should refer to this, you can say here, okay, I can refer to basically the height of my dendrite and how it relates to my Boutlet-Bomer relationship and try to solve for that. Okay, there's a couple of models out there that attempt to do that. Okay, and we'll discuss them briefly. But all the physics associated with that could be summarized into a discussion of this sort, right? Where you have some overpotential related driving force that couples to the motion of that interface. Okay? Okay. Any questions at this point? Yes?
This overpotential is different from the overpotential which is there in the SCI.
I was hoping someone would ask that. Yes, the overpotential should be the same. Okay, it's the same type of overpotential. Yes, this interface is still going to be driven by the deviations from equilibrium of the equilibrium potential of, in this case, of lithium. Basically, in this case, if you think about it, we're talking about deviations, in this case, from metallic lithium, deviations of potential from metallic lithium to make that nuclei grow. So in principle, a very small deviation should be enough. We do know also, however, that, you can see these structures are on the orders of microns, right? They're very big. And at this scale, we can't see the SEI. So there's nothing stopping that as this structure is growing, it's also growing SEI as it proceeds. Okay, and well, that is still there. I'm just not explicitly saying it just to not make it more complicated, but it's still there. Okay, so yeah, that's still happening. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, yes.
So since we have a coarse structure in the center of the separator, it kind of decelerates the growth of a dendrite in the perpendicular to this direction. That means it actually accelerates the rest of the part that is not touching the coarse part of the...
Can you say it again, please?
Okay. So if we don't have the coarse structure in the center, then all the dendrite probably grow at the same rate everywhere.
Except right.
Now we have some part of the dendrite that's touching the coarse structure. That's where
the coarse structure, you're saying?
Coarse structure, fine versus coarse.
I see, yes. Uh-huh.
Center part. So that part is actually not accelerating growing as fast as the rest of part.
Right.
It means it's kind of, it's not that, so the rest of part that's not touching the center part, it's actually growing faster than the other part.
Right, you're right. So these dendrites down here initially grow at a faster rate than when they reach that point. Yeah, presumably when they reach that area, if the current density is fast enough, the rate at which they will go through will be slowed down by the porosity. But at the same time, they're still getting closer to that end, right? You remember, right, this side has a voltage close to around 4 volts. And this one is closer to zero, right? So there's a big voltage drop across that layer, right? And that those deviations from equilibrium is what is trying to drive here. So even though down here it's more free to grow, when it reaches here, and even though it's more constrained, the driving force might be higher to cross that barrier, right? It still has to overcome all those obstacles, but it's a combination of both of them, okay? We can't make the whole thing, we cannot make it porous in the sense of putting that polymer layer, because if we do so, then we also start decreasing the conductivity in the whole thing, and then we have a huge voltage drop there, especially at high C rates, okay? Okay, yeah.
Another question, what causes the arcing of the cell when the dendrite reaches of the other end? This dendrite is coated with an SEI.
Yes, this dendrite is coated, you're right. The dendrite is coated with an SEI, and to rephrase your question, what causes the arcing when we reach the opposite electrode? Let me try to elaborate on that. Again, this region, okay, its potential should be very close to 0 volts, okay? Maybe it's even negative. Maybe it's, I don't know, minus 150 millivolts, to say something. I mean, it's tiny, okay? This side, the voltage should be around 4 volts, okay? And this region... we're talking about here 25 micrometers, which I already drew over there. Okay? So imagine a voltage drop of 4 volts across 25 micrometers. Imagine this whopping size of that electric field. Okay? And now, you're not 25 micrometers, and you managed to grow that thing so that you're less than a micrometer away. Okay? You have given it enough potential that even if this thing is insulating, okay, you should be able to overcome the valence band and jump into the conduction band. So you manage to bridge the band gap, okay, and then you can make electrons go. And of course, there's other stuff going on here. If you remember, right here, well, not here, down here where you want the intercalation to take place, what you're doing, okay, is you're taking lithium ions and electrons and you are putting them in here, right, okay, in the material, converting them into lithium. Those electrons are coming from the back. Okay? So they come here and they're sitting at that interface waiting for a lithium ion to come here and intercalate. If instead what happens, they can be sitting here too. There's nothing stopping them from electrons waiting here for a lithium ion to come through, right? And if you can see here, right, if the moment that electron finds a faster way to jump, it'll jump. Okay, so just from that, that's enough to create arcing, right? Really concentrated Joule heating in this organic electrolyte that we know around 100 and something degrees catches fire, and then the game is over. Okay, which is what happened to that battery. Okay, those help. Okay. Okay, any other questions? Do you have a question? No. Okay. Okay. So, yes, that I hope that completes that qualitative picture. Those dendrites I like very much because they're very easy to understand in the sense, at least qualitatively, we can see all these different mechanisms going on, how it relates to what we have. But dendrites are very complex beasts, right? You can see here, these are 3 micrographs taken from a couple of papers, okay? That purplish region corresponds to the lithium substrate, if you may, okay? That blue shade corresponds to the electrolyte, okay? And what you have in between are the dendrites, okay? The dendrites that I showed you in the previous slide are basically hemispherical, okay? They basically grow as spherical caps. Okay, which is very convenient if you think about it. Mathematically, it's very easy to describe that. But if you compare it to what's happening in this slide, you can see these dendrites actually look more like granular structures that are growing on top of each other. Okay, so it looks like that really a granular mass. Okay, very, very messy. Or these other ones that look almost like extruded fibers of lithium as they go through. That complicates enormously the analysis because now I don't have one morphology. Right now I have 2. Or if you think of this other one at the bottom where, well, I think we tried to encompass it in such a way that it indeed looked like a dendrite. But look, if you look at the internal structure, it actually is conformed with many strands that are somehow growing and regrowing into themselves. Okay? That makes it very complicated as well. Okay, so there are all sorts of morphologies that develop during dendrite growth, and they depend, just like all the other failure mechanisms that we discussed, depends on what electrolyte you pick, what anode you pick, and what cathode you pick, because they will all impact on the local chemistry favoring a specific morphology. Okay, and because of that, it has been very hard to try to address this and completely remove it. Okay, I think you can see the benefits from getting rid of dendrites. Okay, in general. That said, I posted for this class. I think I posted 4 or 5 papers, where the oldest one is 2008. So, I think from at least on the last 5-6 years, this has been a resurgence, or at least an attempt to understand this effect much more. And before that, there is a paper like now and then, but it's not as much as it has been developing in the last few years. So there's a lot of stuff, a lot of new evidence coming up almost every month, explaining, at least throwing a different piece of evidence. So I tried to put out there what I thought would be the most relevant ones for having a discussion on the topic. Okay, so I'm almost sure that if I teach this class a year from now, I will be pulling a subset of these and adding different ones from what is completely new on the topic. Right now it's a moving field, no pun intended regarding the moving boundary, right? But it is indeed moving right now. It's a rapidly changing field. Okay? So these are some of the morphologies that develop. Interestingly enough, I implicitly said when this dendrite was growing, that it was growing from the tip, right? We always said, in fact, in that equation, we're saying that stuff is coming, deposits on the surface, and moves the boundary forward. Okay? There is evidence, as a matter of fact, that says that dendrites are not growing only through that mechanism, but are growing also from extruding material from the bottom. Okay, and in this case, this particular paper, at least they propose evidence. This is not such a new paper, but you can see it here. If you track this one, you can see how it has some sort of head that develops. Okay, basically a region on the lithium tip that couldn't grow anymore. Okay, so develop this like bulgy region. And an instant later, you can see 83 hours later, okay, it has gone to that corner, right? Basically, the shape of the head remained the same. Somehow, the bottom started to move, okay, until you basically cross the entire separator in this case, okay? That completely changes the game. Why? Because there's more than what's occurring at the tip. There's maybe, and I'm just speculating here, there's some mass that is being pushed through the bottom, forcing the dendrite to move from the back. Even if the tip cannot do it, maybe the back is trying to push it through. Suggesting that there could be things like plasticity going on, that maybe there's some mass rearrangement, some surface diffusion pushing the mass through that point that is somehow special energetically that favors it to go forward. Okay, and some people do even speculate, if there's experimental evidence to back it up, that if you compress this whole structure with compressive stresses, that will not happen. So maybe there is some localized mechanical energy region here that is also forcing that stuff to go through that spot because the energy is lower there. Okay, maybe. Okay, again, the speculations based on existing experimental evidence. Okay, and what I have here, and I'm hoping I'm on the internet, this is a different experiment. I like this experiment very much, and before I play the video, I want to show, let's see, I'm going to erase this, and I'm going to keep this one. I'm going to erase this bit. I don't think I'm going to use it today, maybe on Monday. Okay, what these guys did, this is a group of Colombia, because the authors are Crowther and West. What I like from them is that they try to remove the complexity of the commercial battery. I mean, we have particles, we have all this roughness, all these other reactions going on. They said, forget about that. We're not going to do that. So instead, what they did is they created this microfluidic chamber where basically they're pumping, I think it's this one in particular, I can't remember what it is. I think it's, yes, it is EC, DEC, and I think they also do EC, DMC. They're pumping it through a tube, in this case. And over here, they put a wire, a copper wire, okay? And what they do, oh, and down here, there's a counter electrode, okay? And they apply a potential to the copper wire, and what that happens is that lithium starts to deposit there, okay, which is what they have there, as you can see. Okay, if you look at t equals 600 seconds, you have the copper wire, and then you have here the you can see the almost white lithium, okay, as it has deposited, and in some corner a dendrite popped up, okay. And then dendrite is about to poke through. Oh, and I forget to say something. It seems, and you can see it there from the background, that they have like this wall. So basically, lithium will come through, and then you will have some sort of like a diffusion layer. Okay, and this edge corresponds to the edge of what looks orangey, brownish on the screen. Okay, so notice what happens. The dendrite touches that edge after 720 seconds, or 840 seconds if you may, and then after 1140 seconds, it bends, right? It's bending, it's what it seems to be in the direction of the flow, right? It seems like it grows this way, and then an instant later, it just decides to take an angle, right? Maybe because that's the direction where you get the most lithium being fed to you. Okay, that I found extremely interesting, Another interesting thing that I found right before I send you, show you the video, is that notice, like, look at the head of the dendrite, right? It has again like this mushroom-like head, okay? And after 720 seconds, it doesn't seem to be changing that much, okay? Basically, just stays put, okay? And it's still moving forward. Either the dendrite itself, the head of the dendrite is replicating itself, basically dissolving the back and growing it on the front again, surprisingly, with exact same amorphous shape, okay? One second. Or it's growing from the base, okay? Yes?
Did they explain why the dendrite started growing at the bottom of the copper wire instead
of... That's what I'm trying to build up to. Yes, I'm trying to get to that. What I'm hoping to do right now is show you all the evidence, so when the two or three ways that people have speculated, this is an open problem, by the way, so that when I show you those two or three ideas, you can make your own opinion or at least have an idea where you would go, okay, if you were to try to solve the problem, right? But this is an open-ended problem. As far as I know, it hasn't been solved yet. Okay. In fact, there is still some debate whether or not that mechanism is indeed there. Okay. So let me click on that, and hopefully this will come up. You can see the dendrite right there. It's growing. The changes in shade are completely as a result of the of the camera that they're using. And you can see it there, how it's that shape doesn't seem to be changing. And as you're commenting, right, it does indeed seem that it's growing from the back, okay? Either because mass is coming through the surface and decides to extrude through that corner, through that point, okay, or something else is going on. I find it very interesting, and I'm going to play it again, how, let's see if I can pause it here, how when it touches the surface where there's a flow coming, that instant decides to bend sideways, but the exact same shape, basically. Okay, and it does give the impression that stuff is coming through the sides and attaching there and pushing it forward. Okay, that does indeed seem to be happening there. Let me play it again. It just happens to basically develop in that one corner. And if you look at even at the shades don't be changing at all there on the tip. It's stuff from the back that somehow just keeps coming and pushing the rest forward. Completely changing the way we're looking at it on the screen, right? Where we're saying that stuff was coming to the surface, moving the boundary. Okay? And then it reaches the edge and then it starts bending to one side, either because the defects bended that way or because the tip decided that direction was the best way to go. Okay? And then, of course, it manages to be on the shielded area again. And then it ends. Any questions? Should I play it again? Yes?
Comparing the video you just showed us in one slide back with a time increment given, mm-hmm. it's a significant difference in growth rate of the dendrite. Because the first one is 56 hours, then 83 hours later.
Right.
Something like this. And second right. one, mm-hmm. maybe like 10 minutes, you know, 11 minutes.
Right.
What is controlling the actual growth rate?
Yes, that's a very good question. What controls the growth rate, given that one set of evidence specifies a very long growth window and the other one is a much smaller? The electrolyte, the discharge conditions. Okay. In the case of the commercial battery, all the other stuff, I mean, it doesn't get dirtier than when you assemble to put in a real battery. So that would also completely would change the morphology. So on my end, it seems that the hardest thing is to how do you translate that experiment or the other experiment and put it in here? Okay. How do you draw knowledge or draw conclusions, if you may, to apply it to make a better battery? I think the way it is doing right now, I think it's very hard. I mean, they're beautiful experiments and I think they're teaching a lot. But I think that there's a big gap between those experiments and doing it in a real battery. I think the hardest part in a real battery is that, well, besides all the mess that we have, seeing what happens in here in situ during its growth, it's very difficult. Okay. I think there might be like two people that are doing it, which I'm also added a couple slides on that to show you. Okay, yes?
Are these dendrites fractal in nature?
Some people look at them as fractal. Again, depending on what conditions they grow, they may look arborescent and bifurcating as they grow. I guess strictly fractal, it would be a very strong word, because that would mean that they, at every length scale, they would self-replicate, and you will always have the atomic limit, right? So I think they are, in that sense, they would be limited either by the mechanism in which they're depositing and all the different driving forces, surface tension and free energy of transformation, in order to favoring that specific morphology. So yes, they could be thought about it in that way. And in fact, there is, I think, a couple of projects. One, I think, at Penn State and LBNL, where they are trying to quantify the fractal dimension of those structures. Okay, which I think that by itself it's going to be challenging. But I guess at the end of the day, regardless if they're fractal or not, you want to avoid that thing to cross the boundary, right? Either if it's spherical or not. Okay. Okay. And any other questions? Okay. And let's see how much time I have. I think I have two more minutes. This is another piece of evidence from a different author. What they do here, they have an electrolyte and the electrode. Okay, and this is after 0 minutes, 160 minutes, and 200 minutes. Notice very different from the experiments from Crowther and West. Okay, and even the morphology of that dendrite that you can see, it's coming here in the middle. It's very different. Okay, what is interesting that the electrolyte and the electrode are within the plane, and what we're seeing right now, it's at the surface of the system. Okay, in 3D, let me try to sketch that. So here you have your electrolyte, okay, and here you have your electrode. And the dendrite, it's poking out where there's no electrolyte and there's no electrode, and this thing is coming out that way. Okay? Further supporting the hypothesis that is growing from the base. Right? Out here, there's nothing. Okay? So there's no lithium to put on the top to replicate the object as it grows. So that, to me, certainly provides strong evidence that there is an additional mechanism besides growing from the tip to growing from the base. Okay? And that is, I think, the two concepts I wanted to convey today. Okay? That there's, that dendrites grow by depositing material on the surface and also somehow by extruding it from the back. Okay? And, I'm just gonna stop there. There's a lot of other pieces of evidence I want to show. Before trying to make some sense in some way of all this evidence. Okay, but I've already gone over my time. Okay, so any final questions? Okay, well then, have a nice weekend and see you guys on Monday. Mm-hmm.